sitting in a circle on those small metal chairs with faded yellow backs that were plastic and seats that were cracked or chipped. Do you know those seats? They're really small. They're not great for your posture or for your butt if you're an adult. But children get it stuck with them pretty often. Sitting on those small metal chairs in this small room with no windows, not much circulation, with wooden walls around them, were these four friends: Carolyn, Elaine, Adam, and Nick. Around them, around their table, around their walls, were posters with rainbow colors suggesting that we love one another, that we remember the Ten Commandments, showing depictions of Moses parting the Red Sea. There was felt on the wall, for in every Sunday school class there must be felt, showing depictions of Noah's Ark and Jonah and the great fish as they floated by. These four kids would learn from Miss Linda, a middle school teacher by trade who faithfully showed up for these four kids and the occasional grandchild or cousin who was visiting family, or maybe the new family who was in town and wanted to check out the church as they moved in. Now, Miss Linda didn't have a background in theology, nor did she feel all that familiar with the Bible, but she did something far more important for these four and the others who walked through that door. She welcomed them and saw them as humans in need of relationship. She welcomed their thoughts in a way that few others did, whether at church or at school. The friends, and truly they were friends, even when they fought on the playground or disagreed in class, the friends dutifully listened to the stories Miss Linda would share. They sang, plenty off key, but with enough joy that it could make up for it. Those kids, whether or not they held the Christian beliefs after they were taught all this at an early age, those kids stayed connected to their church of origin. They married or buried loved ones there. They visited from time to time and sang in the choir or helped with Sunday school. And yet, when one of the kids, one of the grown-ups at this point, recounted their experience as a child versus their experience as an adult, it was amazing to see just how different the two were. It was night and day, Adam said. Downstairs, Miss Linda would be patient and friendly. If we had questions about how a whale could swallow a person and the person live, she'd encourage us to ask or think about it or toss it aside. But upstairs? No, not upstairs. Adam went on to recount that some Sundays, if they were working on an art project, or there was just one moment, that one awkward moment of silence where you could hear around, you could hear the pastor upstairs. Preacher, really, was the word used, and boy, was he preaching. Shouting and stomping and shouting some more, all in the name of religion. For those of us somewhat attuned to politics, you might think of their preacher, Don was his name, as the whip. He really was out there whipping votes for Jesus, getting people signed up, or else. Not someone you want on your bad side, always able and willing to get fired up so that you didn't get sent down to the fire. We often think of having two churches because we have two worship services, or there are times we're used to churches that have multiple sites in different locations, maybe different ministers, and we have some sense of how can we be in one community in two different places. But truthfully, most churches are indeed two churches regardless, and not particularly in a helpful way. The two churches are often separated into upstairs and down, children and adults, worship and education, as though any of these ought to be or could truly be separated. So different is the style of community, so different the style of sharing information and building relationships between the two, that they might seem unrecognizable to the other without some explanation. I can think back to my own Sunday school experience. and recall hearing the stories of others like Adam and his gang. Perhaps you've had similar experiences, whether informally at churches or through formal confirmation classes, wondering if your teacher would listen to your doubt and hear the question, wondering if your teacher shared the same questions, and sometimes knowing that others in the church just wanted you to stay silent. Better to be seen and not heard. We realize, in a way, that how we interact with one another shows our theology and our philosophy. If we can listen even to the smallest people among us, if we can listen to the youngest and the oldest alike, then perhaps we truly have a theology where everyone matters. On the other hand, when we start to block out people, not imagining that their experiences are worth much given their relative age or experience, we're missing a piece of the puzzle. More importantly, we hope to learn and teach one another in our church that it's not always about a concrete fact. In my own Sunday school and in Adam's church, that was really the case, at least with Preacher Don. There is a fundamental difference between a faith that is centered on recitation of facts and scriptures and beliefs, as opposed to one that's centered on relationships and connection. Frederick Buchner writes, "Faith is often better understood as a verb than a noun, and as a process rather than a possession. What it is we do together, not what we hold." Adam and some of the others from a Sunday school class, as we spoke, shared an opinion that they seemed actually downright embarrassed to say to a minister, to me. They felt that they learned so much more from Miss Linda, and that their relationship with her was the thing that brought them closer to church, closer to the sacred or the divine. Whereas old fire and brimstone up there, that guy, the disallowing of doubt and the certainty of events that seemed illogical at best, somewhat turned them off. Again, I'm willing to bet some of us know that experience in our own lives or having heard about similar experiences with friends and family. Often what matters for us is how we relate to one another. Karl Berner, a lay leader from the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, offers this line that sticks with so many of us, that we may not remember the exact word someone uses, but we do remember the way they made us feel. So often that's an important piece of religious community, but one that sometimes faith communities struggle with. Is it about the substantive knowledge or the relationships? Here's the thing. Both pedagogy, the way we're going to teach and share information, and theology, our ideas about religion, have many different facets and, frankly, people who feel passionately about them. There's some people who swear by different learning styles, verbal, kinesthetic, and visual. And some people who, regardless of what you ask, are going to stand and give a lecture for an hour and just go with it. There are some people who believe that there is no God or that God is in everything. And there are some who will believe that you'll go to hell for even speaking such a heretical thought. It's somewhat amazing, actually, how faith communities handle such a weighty issue as how to educate people, not just children, youth, and adults about matters of faith. It's true that we often emphasize children when we think about education, but we all are faced with learning in some way. And we're all teachers to one another, often more than we are aware of. Particularly having a child, and some of you who do have a child or have raised children may have picked this up on your own, I'm amazed at how often my son does something that I did without wanting him to pick it up. Just the other day, I was trying to kind of buy some time when I didn't want to buy him something. And I said, "Well, we'll see." 5 minutes later, I talked about picking up something in the food aisle, and yes, he said, "Well, we'll see." All of us share our words and our stories with people around us. However it is we live and model our lives, people pick up on it. Our children, our youth, and adults. And so whatever way we can be intentional about that is important. This year, here at Brew, in our children and youth education program, we are being intentional about learning more about our heritage, our Judeo-Christian heritage, by understanding some of the details and stories that led to the formation of our faith. We hope that in so doing, our children and adults will have a sense of what it means to be a current day UU. While 2015 UUs may seem fairly removed from first century Jews or 15th century Christians, there are amazing ways that we are still connected. Our Jewish ancestors valued community and covenant so much that people might look past the set beliefs about heaven or hell, the Messiah, or much of anything else to be connected with one another. Still, the community would be fairly weak without sharing stories of how they came to be. And so the role of education wasn't just how do we get by, how do we make money and succeed in life, but it served as a glue, as a way of binding people together, even when they were kicked out of their land, refugees spread across other nations, when they were enslaved and defeated by war. Many of us have heard a relative at some point recount stories of the good old days and how they went through times that were lean and tough, but they survived anyway, and kids these days just don't know what they've got. Perhaps some of us are the ones telling those stories at this point. In fact, that's some of what we should be doing, especially on a larger level, sharing our past and our history with one another, be it individual or as an institution. That piece of thinking about how we are connected to one another deeply are some of that religious way that Sophia Foss talked about. Going deep, wide, and high together. As Unitarian Universalists, we have our own version of sharing stories, and it serves a function in community to frame our past successes, but also to invigorate the present and look towards the future. Like the ancient Jews from which their faith community began, early Christians had to navigate what it meant to be a religious minority and out of political power in their world. How many of you feel like we're in the minority religiously in the landscape? One or two of you? Most people, upon hearing our church, either say, huh, or, oh, you're that faith. Which is not exactly true. Rare is the person who knows what we believe, whether inside or outside of the church. We share this connection with some of the early faith communities who in their formation had to figure out their identity, struggling even as they were small. Early Christians focused on building relationships and supporting one another as deeply as families do, perhaps even more so than families do for some of us. Education plays a significant role in Christianity, with people studying at the church, learning there, learning how to read the Bible. And following the Reformation and the settling of colonies, there was a strand of Christianity that led pretty directly to us, focused on the dispersal of power amongst all the people in the church, lay and clergy, and the shared responsibility for each of us to help the church live to its best self. With that idea was another growing idea that the unique experience a person or church had was important. And that one idea that originated in Rome or England or anywhere else could be useful. It's important learning best wisdom, but it may not be the only answer. Working in conjunction with the people on the ground, wherever they are, had some great utility. And you can see then how our faith connects to that. We know it's important to share our experiences. We know that when we're left out of talking about how we interact with that which is holy, with one another, we feel overlooked and marginalized. We believe that if people are peaceful, open to new revelations, and not closed off, people are willing to be in relationship with one another. If so, there is a piece of truth found in each story, not just the ones we glorify or privilege. But this work, building those relationships and community, takes time and is active work. Nothing is built or woven or completed by accident. Just like the story about the Buddhist teacher and student, there's much more than just hearing and reciting the answers. We must walk the path, whatever that path is for us, and it will surely be different. We must fully engage life, living an authentic, genuine life of compassion, with a willingness to be changed and change the world around us. Being a Unitarian Universalist means that active search for truth and meaning, a spiritual discipline of questioning and seeking and discerning, constant engagement, looking not just at the information, not just at words or dates and numbers, but exploring the relationships around us and how we might grow from them. Presently, in this day and age, we UUs offer not to give people, children or otherwise, an answer to religious truths. We recognize that there are certain parameters that we hold true: hope, not damnation, truth being evolving and not set in stone, equality amongst people, even when diverse, especially when diverse. But we don't give an answer. We hope that people look to find their answer, that there are brave souls who are willing to walk into the room to teach children and youth and adults, recognizing that their lives should be taken seriously. In so doing, in the willingness to live with one another, learn from one another, and listen to one another, and our willingness to risk being wrong for the sake of being connected, we end up loving one another and building something lasting and true. Amen, and blessed be.